Hello, everyone. This is Susie Ward. Welcome you to the first Matthew and Friends show of 2008. I am Matthew's mother. The story of our on and off planet telepathic communication is on MatthewBooks.com, and a short version is on BBS radio site, just in case you're a new listener and don't know Matthew and me. Because of a technological glitch, the December show was late getting on the air. Well, I can't imagine that anyone waited patiently for 10 minutes to see if eventually I would say hello and the show would go on. It did, but fortunately I didn't have a guest that you missed. It was a departure from my usual format. So what the show was is my reading the chapter called 2012 from the book titled, And Then God Said, Then I Said, Then He Said. That chapter is posted in Matthew's Messages on my site, MatthewBooks.com, and I hope you will read it there. The only thing missing on my site is something that I had said myself. It was important, though, so I'm going to say it again now. God chose that title for the book, as well as all the chapter names and the presenters of the extraordinary messages that were transmitted to Celestial Blue Star of the Pleiades, David of Arcturus, and me. It's thrilling for me that Celeste and David can be with us today. They are walk-ins from highly advanced civilizations and are powerful light warriors who not only are exposing the rampant deception and corruption in our world, but are battling the dark forces in space. Before I introduce them, I'm going to tell you how we met. It was about 4 years ago. Celeste's biological father, Blue Star of the Pleiades, and Matthew, my son Matthew, arranged for us to connect through Jean Houdon's Earth Rainbow Network internet site. Jean has published and archived all of Matthew's messages, and he trusts his information. And occasionally, Jean asks Matthew's opinion about material that his readers send to him. In this case, it was an excerpt of a message that was transmitted to Celeste, that was posted on BlueStarSpeaks.com, which is one of her and David's three websites. Well, Matthew wholeheartedly endorsed every word of that information, and then I totally forgot about it. A few months later, I received an email from someone named Celeste who wrote that we should talk sometime. My thought was, talk about what? Well, Matthew popped in and said, Mother, this is important. Follow up on this. That was the beginning of my treasured friendship with Celeste and David. And since then, we have cooperated in a number of ventures to explain what is going on in our world in a universal context and to offer spiritual guidance to receptive people. Now it's my honor and huge delight to say welcome, Celeste and David.
Well, hi, and we are welcomed by your welcome.
Okay.
And I double that welcome.
Okay, good. First of all, would you please tell our listeners, why did you two volunteer to leave your advanced civilizations and walk into Earth human bodies? Okay, let's do ladies first. Celeste?
Okay, that was an interesting question, Susie, because very truthfully, there are times when I wonder about my decision myself.
I can imagine. but okay, you made it. On what basis did you make that decision?
I can remember with very clear recall every incarnation I've had on this Earth Star planet. And during the time that I was off-world here, it's no secret to those who are on other planets, and certainly no secret from the God of this world, that we all gather together. It's sort of emissaries or ambassadors from different worlds who meet in different committees and listen to what is going on this planet, as well as other planets within this universe, and what is foreseen as the probability rate of upcoming events and incursions to this planet by dark forces. God always asks for volunteers when this occurs, when it is seen what is happening and the probability ratio of will it get worse or will it get better. Not all volunteers are accepted. Many people are chosen, and I use the term people simply as a more expedient way of explaining rather than going into the beings. But many people are chosen and asked to return to this planet to do what they can to help alleviate the stress, help people to learn or relearn, as the case may be, all that needs to be done that they can do in order for this planet to continue and evolve, rather than be in the horrible shape that she has been in until just a short number of years ago. In my case, it was not necessary for me to return. I can truthfully say I felt that I had done everything, seen everything, and there were other places that I knew I needed to be. However, I was intrigued by what I saw as what I might be able to do, even though I did know it was going to be a very difficult time here. At first, God simply reassured me by saying, yes, you've done your share. You know, you can stay here now. We have these others. Take a break. Go here or do other things. And Father and I talked about it, and I kept saying, I want to go, I want to go, I want to go. And I don't think I stopped. It was rather incessant and probably rather childish of me at the time. But God finally relented by saying, let my children go and take her with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
And that is really until my actual return here, which was a traumatic one. As you know, Susie, I returned in the ocean 2 miles from the ARE, Edgar Casey's Foundation, in Virginia Beach on July 26, 1989. My interactions with people they've ranged from the most treasured, most beautiful ones, such as what I have with you, with David, with a few others here on the planet, to feeling totally alienated and very much alone at times as you make this Earth Star walk among people who their beliefs have belief systems that have become jaded, or they've been so badly conditioned by beliefs that aren't true that it made it a very, very difficult walk. It's still not easy. It's still difficult because of the energetics that are rampant on the earth and because of all the hostile forces that just seem to try to hang on as much as we battle them, and we, meaning all of us who are here to do what I'm doing and what you and David are doing. But it is not a decision that I would ever have recanted on. I would not have changed my lifestyle walk here for anything or anybody in the universe. I feel I am doing what I should be doing, and I can't do more than that.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you for explaining that. My first thank you, really, though, was thank you for coming here. Thank you for being here and helping to the huge extent that I know you have been. David, your turn.
Well, hello, Susie.
Hi.
My name is David, and unlike Celeste, I walked in about 45 years ago. And again, unlike Celeste, who came in with what people call total recall, which is not absolute recall. You don't remember everything. Nobody possibly could. But she remembers her life experiences. She remembers much of her past and other worlds and everything else. Where, for me, my choice in this life experience was to come in and experience life as everybody else did, with having to work my way through everything, figure everything out. In that way, I could better understand what we were up against during this life experience, during these present times and now. We all chose to be here now, like she said, or we were chosen to be here. And for those of you that think our numbers are few, there's a lot more of us on the planet than you would possibly imagine. I met Celeste, oh gosh, what was it, 7-8 years ago again. And a number of years back ago, while I was talking with God, actually I think Celeste was talking with God, we both found out that it was actually decreed by the God of this universe that we would meet up once again this lifetime. What most people don't understand about us is we've actually, in 8 previous lifetimes, been married before. We actually have a total of 13 kids. So the reincarnation process goes on and on and on. Those people that were here during Atlantis and Lemuria are here now again. Thanks, Susie.
Well, thank you, David. You touched on something that is actually a question that I have on my very short list. And that you mentioned there really are a lot of you. And when I say you, I mean the volunteers from other civilizations who have come expressly at this time to help us and Earth during this transitional period. And the question that I have right here is, how many of you are here? Do you know?
I haven't got a clue.
Okay.
There's so many people. There's a lot of people that are birthed into human form. Some of us are walk-ins, which means that we simply do a soul exchange when the other soul has decided that it's time to leave.
The numbers are changing all the time, Susie. I can't give you any exact numbers either because there are so many of us. At one time, we were referred to as the 400,000 strong, and that was years ago. I can tell you that we meet that other walk-ins who are conscious of who they are from all over the world all the time. And we all share the same symptoms, the same longings, the same soul desire. Everything that David and I experience, these others experience as well. They may not have had the extreme life and death situations, which are the life and death experiences, which are known here as near-death experiences or NDEs, that we have had. But then it's not part of what they've had to undergo for their own personal reasons, for their soul contract reasons. But are they here? They're everywhere. They are all over the planet. But the numbers do change almost on a daily basis.
Yes, and they are of all evolutionary levels. Some are very young souls. Some are very old souls. Mind you, not all old souls are evolved. Some of them have not learned their lessons yet. There can be somebody that comes in and spends 2-3 lifetimes and learns everything they need to learn. Some people may come back hundreds of times. So everything is an experience. There always has to be a duality in process there. People need to experience both sides of the coin. There's going to be those that are going to do good, and then there's going to be those that are going to do the not so good. And the same applies with humans, the same applies with walk-ins.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that makes sense. Of course it makes sense. I just hadn't thought about that before. Again, this is, do you know how many other planets there are just in this part of the universe, say, just in our galaxy, that have had the struggles be with so much darkness almost from the beginning of souls inhabiting?
I think that from what I recall and what I've been told through my conversations with God and the rest of the family up there, that most civilizations go through a period. Most are birthed into a young status, and they have to learn the difference between one aspect and another, just like everybody else does. At what pace they evolve is totally up to them. And again, that may, you can put it on a personal level or you could put it on a planetary level, because since everybody's connected together, what one person does raises the vibration level of another person. But you have to get the whole consciousness of the planet up before the levels start rising.
Mm-hmm. And I will add to that, Susie, every planet has its, what I call, its birthing pains. Every civilization has had its periods of disorganized chaos before it can enter into the realm of organized chaos. This planet here, the Earth Star planet, it's a bit different because as everything is denser here, sometimes it may feel like we're walking through quicksand, because what people here on this planet have not yet learned, at least not for the most part, is that everything they do, say, act, think, it sends out that energetic thought form, which attracts other thought forms just like it. So a tiny little group of 2 or 3 people sharing those thought forms will attract a whole mass of people all over the planet with the same thought forms. And when that occurs, then the disorganized chaos is reigning supremely. It's only when a type of revolution, you can think of it as a soul revolution, that begins a cleansing and purifying process on a one-by-one soul basis, that then what they call miracles are born. It's then when the people, for instance, on this planet, start to realize there are greater realities. And as more greater truths are revealed to them, then they are evolving whether they know it or not. And other worlds, yes, they've had similar experiences, which is why they have so much compassion for the humans. Because in one way or another, every planet, every civilization that has ever been and ever will be, we're all interrelated.
Ergo, the same, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm. Celeste, you especially mentioned that it is a difficult walk here. Obviously, than in civilizations that have already experienced the turmoil and the violence and the bloodshed that is going on in our world. Especially when you come from one where there is, I guess, organized chaos. During the years that, and granted, you've had less years here than David, but still, the frequencies are so much higher now than when you walked in. I'm hoping that that life for you now has eased correspondingly with the higher frequencies.
I will give you a yes on the easing of life with the higher frequencies. That has been such an enormous help to me. And the peacefulness, the serenity, the open doorways that I see, the vortexes, all these wonderful beings from everywhere who choose to come and show themselves to me, to speak with me, and at times to reassure me when I'm feeling a little down because of the mass consciousness, which we've been trying to use as much pressure as we can without violating any universal laws in breaking through to help people to help themselves. Yes, what is a great detriment, and you and David know this very well from your own experiences as well, is the continuous onslaught, the continuous attacks that we have to endure by the dark forces who definitely do not want us to live, period, let alone continue teaching. I came here with my mission, which is to teach the teachers to be all that they can be, and for them to go on to teach others to be all that they can be, and help in the eradication of the falsehoods about the Illuminati, and in the eradication of fear, and teaching people how fear literally erodes their spirit. And this is what our biggest obstacle is right now. And again, I'm naming you two, but there are again many, many more besides you. And speaking for myself, the greatest turmoil is the onslaught of the dark forces. We three know what we had to go through from the very moment we started to write God's book. And I don't think it's an experience any of us will ever forget. That was just but a small example of how desperately they want truth to be withheld continually from people.
And my understanding is that right now, because of the fear within the dark forces themselves, the people on Earth who have been so influenced by the negativity of the universal dark forces, that the dark tentacles from the thought forms and the intentions that these desperate people who want to control the world, the energy that they are putting out is lashing out ferociously. That is, well, actually, that's what God was explaining about what happened to me. And it is a time when everyone needs to be more acutely aware than ever before of situations where they could be vulnerable to being influenced by these dark tentacles. And as you mentioned, fear. Fear is both the greatest tool of the dark forces and their fuel to keep on going. So this is, I know this is something that at least the three of us have been dealing with in the messages we receive that we distribute, the emails we receive from people and we respond to. Please, please do not feel fear. You mentioned the book. Maybe we should start with David. He's been sort of a silent voice the last few minutes. Where did the idea for the book, well, I know where it came from. Would you please tell listeners how it came to you?
Well, actually, for myself, I was sitting here in my chair one day, and Celeste and I were talking. She says, oh, by the way, when I lied down yesterday, God popped in and told me I was to write his book. And God told Celeste the title of the book, exactly how it was to be, and even showed her how he wanted the cover designed. And shortly after that, she came down, she thought about it for a while, and then she sat there, and she says, you are supposed to be part of the book as well. And what was it, probably about 2 or 3 weeks later, you were going through a lot of things at that time. We had discussed, Susie, you were, and Celeste and I had discussed between the two of us that we should invite you in to, if you have the time, to join in on the adventure. And I remember we asked you one evening while we were talking, and we told you that it was your choice. We knew you had a lot of projects in the fire and everything else. And I think it took you all of about maybe 5 seconds to say, oh, yeah.
I think it was 2 seconds.
Okay. And that's how the book came about. And God slowly gave the three of us the different chapter title names. And then all heck broke loose. It was every interruption in the world was being thrown at us to keep us from proceeding on, including the illusions of being sent to some of the channels around the planet that if you receive messages from God, then you're not speaking to who you think you are. And that's just another decoy, another ploy to bring an illusion upon this book, which is God's book. It is his words. We didn't edit it. He just transmitted the information to us. We asked him questions, and everything just flowed.
Well, not without some detours. The information flowed, but we certainly were, a lot of obstacles and challenges were tossed into our paths. Of course, God also said, well, I don't know exactly what he said. I mean, to the two of you, he did tell me very clearly as I start, after I started the chapter 212, and I guess God and I spoke for a few minutes there, and then he threw me a curve and said, okay, now, what I want you to do with this chapter is go through all of Matthew's messages and pull out all the parts that deal with the year 2012 and the transitional stage until then, and what life in the golden age is going to be like. And, well, that was very time-consuming. As I was thinking about this when God was telling me, this is what I want you to do. And so I said, well, if that's what you want, of course I'll do it. But why don't you just talk about this yourself? Because you see, in that case, all I have to do is sit here and type. Type what he's telling me. It didn't turn out that way. I have found that arguing with God really, it doesn't pay off. That is, he always wins.
Not that you don't try.
Oh, of course I try. I'm not really a rebellious spirit here, but when I can see a very clear alternate to what God is saying he wants, I'm going to propose it. And he shoots it down. So that's pretty much the way it goes. It's sort of like so much for free will. That's true. I still have the choice of doing what my other thought is, but I'm always glad that I go along with what God says. I think this would be a better idea, Susie, really. So, will you talk about, please, some of the things that are in the book that you worked on, the messages that you received, and before we run out of time, please mention where on your site the listeners can go to get just a wee bit about the content of the book, but primarily if they would like to pre-order it.
Well, the book is listed on our awakenedhearts.com website. That is Awakened Hearts, and Hearts is plural. You can find links to it from actually all three websites. The book, God wanted to, most people think God's never here. He thinks that he kind of left for a while, now he's back, he left, he just pops in whenever he needs to. When in actuality, everything we do, everything we say, everything we think, he's actually a part of. And more often than not, he's commenting back to us. It is those that choose not to listen who have gotten so drowned into the third dimensional aspect of life, which is of just physicality, that don't tend to hear him. What most people don't realize is the true human being is half man, half God. We are all expressions of God. And through us, he experiences life. And I use he as a simple way to explain it, because he is an androgynous being. He is male and female energies completely in balance. We had fun with the book because he would just come up with the most off-the-wall expressions. One of his favorite expressions is when he's talking about something that people should know better, but they don't really know, or perhaps they don't think about it much, is he likes to use the word arg.
Yeah. He and Charlie Brown.
Oh, yeah. I think the funnest chapter was probably the end one there, which is don't shoot the messengers, which would be the three of us.
Yeah. There's a large group of messengers, but as far as the book is concerned, it's the three of us.
Mm-hmm. And you find that the information throughout the book, in every chapter, all three of us had a part in it. God would give his message to, say, myself, and then I would pass it on to Celeste, and then she'd pass it on to Susie or some other order, and we'd ask questions, and he would answer them. Everything just flowed beautifully as far as the information coming to all of us. You will notice that the tone changes a little bit from person to person, depending on the evolutionary level of all three of us and the way that we speak, our background and education, things like that. He uses our words to express himself. I believe, Susie, I think you asked that question of him.
I did, and it was after I received the first message that I forget which of you received it from God, but the other one came in with questions or comments, and so by the time it came to me, both of your, you know, what you had received from God was there. And God speaks to me so plainly, so simply, much more so than Matthew. And so I said, you know, God, I just don't understand why you sound so different when you're speaking with Celeste and David from this very simple way that you and I talk. And I wish I had thought of this earlier. I would have pulled it up so I could say exactly what he said. But it was on the order of, well, Susie, let's think about it in this vein. Say you are a vanilla ice cream cone. Other people are chocolate ice cream cones, strawberry ice cream cones. Some people are caramel sundaes. Some people are banana splits. I just go along with whatever flavor and serving everyone is. And, you know, that really so delighted me. You know, God is so personable. A close relationship with God is just about the most reassuring and uplifting and enjoyable experience that I think anyone could have. Celeste, what do you think about that? I mean, I know that you may not have exactly arguments with God, but...
Yes, I do.
Okay. Good.
It's usually at that time that David will say, I'm not getting hit by that lightning bolt. I'm out of here. No, there is the most incredible, immaculate connection that we each have with God, although all people have it, they just don't know it, or they don't want to know it. That's part of personal preference, but speaking for myself, it is very pure. He is love. He is the most formidable being of love, and yet God speaks to each of us, as you say, in his own way. He speaks to us as he relates to how we are, how we speak, how we act or react, as a means of keeping the communication clear and clean. And he has the most compassion for each aspect of himself. And that's something people don't understand, is that they are each God in physicality. As God evolves, as we evolve, the popular belief on Earth is that God is all-knowing, that God is all-perfect, and he's not going anywhere. He's somewhere up there and doesn't need to do anything. Well, he is all-knowing. He would be the first to tell you, and Susie, he has told you before, that he is not perfect, and that he learns through our experiences. He must always be expanding. He must always be evolving. It's a part of who and what he is. And yet he has the greatest sense of humor, as we three all know. In fact, somewhere in the book, I don't remember when or where or how, but I remember it is in the book because it happened as I was writing, and I'm typing on the computer as fast as I can. God suddenly decides he's going to speak really fast. He starts talking so fast, I'm typing away, not caring about how badly misspelled things are, just so I can get it down and go back later and correct it. And at the same time he's talking, I had this thought of my own, and that was, oh, I wish God could type. And all of a sudden God says to me, I am typing. I said, what? He said, you're typing, aren't you? It makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Oh, of course. And yet, as much as we know with our entire being that each of us is an aspect of God, it's not always... We're not always thinking of it. We were with people a few nights ago, and he is receiving information for a book also, and he said something that reminded me that in 2003, after I had just worked feverishly for many, many months to get out revised editions of the first two Matthew books and totally get out the third book simultaneously, and that was in May. And I was sweeping the deck one day, and God said, Voices of the Universe. And I said, what? And he said, yes. That's the title of the book that I want you to have out by the end of the year. And so what I was saying to this couple that we were with is, God has absolutely no sense at all of linear time. And I meant it. But of course he does, because this is what we are living in, linear time. We can't even relate to what it's like in the timelessness of the continuum. But at any rate, we all laughed at it because I did realize after I said it, that was a rather foolish remark.
Susie, this might be a good time. I am getting a reminder from up above to mention that we have other ascended voices that are also a part of the book, that we have a lot of them who wanted to be a part of it. We couldn't get them all in. So I'll let you handle that one.
Okay. well, Hatan, who has been with me from the very beginning, back in early 1994, popped in and said, in essence, okay, I've cleared it with God. I get to be part of the book. well, okay, Hatan, you know, Dave, you know, I don't argue with Hatan. Well, not very often, anyway. So he's one, and his part is communication with the God. And actually, God told him, I want you to say something else besides the chapter in one of the Matthew books, but I also want that in there because you said it so well. So, Hatan is one. Mother Mary, a few years ago, gave me a very short but beautiful, beautiful message. And God wanted that to be included in the book. Serapis Bay. Now, that was a real surprise. And I don't recall whether it was Serapis who told me first or God who said, my child, Serapis Bay, is going to give you a message for the book. So, and then, actually, Matthew doesn't have a big part in the book at all. This is horrible to say I don't remember. Well, it's the truth to say I don't remember. If there is anything in there besides his material that I worked with for weeks to to accommodate God's preference of Matthew's material in the 2012 chapter. David, I know that there was a surprising message that you took. I don't mean that the information was surprising, but it was a late entry.
Oh, yeah.
A few of them, actually.
Oh, yes, actually, quite a number of them were popping in. Before I tell you about that one, I'd like to let everybody know that the book actually had almost twice as many chapters in it. And through the process of working on the book, we realized that if we actually did it that way, we would be doing encyclopedias instead of books. So there is another book, and we've already received a number of the chapters for that we will be working on. But
Eventually.
If Smith God pops in and says, I want that done by September, which he may just well do. Yes, I was in my experimentations with my connections with beings on world, off world, through what most people term as telepathy. I found that even while reading a book with other presenters in there, such as Susie's books, that while I was reading it, they were actually leaning over my shoulder. And anytime I had a question, they'd just pop in and they would answer it. So while I was experimenting, one day I was outside giving thanks to the earth for all that she provides to us and everything that she's gifted us with, including life. All of a sudden there was this voice in my head, and I started listening, and I said, who is this? And it was the earth. The earth, which has her own soul, she is female, started talking to me, and we've had multitudes of conversations over the years, and she popped in during the writing of the book and requested a section in the book, which God wholly agreed with.
Yes, Earth is the one that I had in mind. Maybe you were reading my thoughts, David.
I think I probably was.
I think you probably can.
Oh, yes. We had so many wonderful beings pop in. My master teacher, Milena, popped in and wanted to be a part of the book. One of the beings on the High Council for this universe, Tomas, he wanted to pop in on the book. He has an excellent section in there.
Commander Theta.
Theta, Celeste Father, Blue Star. Who else was in there?
Okay, Horus.
Yes, Horace.
Oh, yes.
Don't forget about Horace.
Yes.
They all have important information. And one thing we want to be very clear about to people who do not maybe yet have these experiences, but could if they really wanted to, we have our own ways of checking the ID of every being that speaks to us. We have our means of using whatever protection we must so that there is no infiltration by the dark forces, that our communiques are clear, they are pure, they are not tainted. And that goes for God, too. I forget which one of us, or maybe it was all of us, that we check his ID so often that which one of us was it that he finally said, "All right, already, it's me, okay?"
It wasn't I. It was one of
you,
too.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to mention Horace because it's just an excerpt in there. But actually, I think... I don't think there's even one word in this whole book that doesn't have value. Horace is a reptilian commander. The reptilian civilization, it's rather been painted in a bad light as being evil or dark. David, you mentioned this way back, that, hey, some of the ETs here are of the light and some are not. Well, the reptilian civilization is not all dark. And those who are of the light, because they've been given a bad name by the dark ones, are especially eager to either transmute all of the darkness in those reptilians, or battle them in space to get them out of this part of the universe. So you can see that the book is quite an assortment of sources. One thing I'd like to mention is that God so frequently speaks to Celeste and David and me as my child or my dear child, which is really very endearing and truthful. And truthful.
Yeah, God spent a lot of time in the book trying to do detail things as much as he could, as to explain things in a way that people could understand the truth. And because so much of what they've been taught over the years is not the truth, and the reason behind it was simply to control them and to bring fear into their lives. When people realize that fear is a conditioned response, and once it is eliminated from your life, there is nothing that can hurt you. I mean, you have to practice personal
responsibility,
of course. And obviously, in the times that we're living in right now, you have to keep an eye out all the way around you and learning how to defend yourself and all that. But he tries so hard to explain in detail how this happened, why it happened, and what needs to be done. And I think he did a masterful job, and I was proud to be a part of it.
I would have to say that when I only recently asked God, I mean, what was the point in asking him when he first told me, "I want you to write my book"? You know, he interrupted my nap, number one, and I never did go back to sleep at that point. Well, I have since then, but asking him just recently, why this book, why now? His response was, there could never be a better time. And I look at this and I realize the implications far beyond his words. Look around. The people are changing, even though so many of them have had to change through pain and turmoil and being victimized by friends, lovers, whoever, even people they may trust, even temporarily. But it has been a catalyst that so many are now listening and waiting for truth and are not really buying in to the old way of the belief systems. So to me personally, it makes perfect sense that this book had to come out now. I remember he told me, and I don't know, Susie, if you and David remember, he said, okay, if you can't have it finished, this is volume one, by the end of September. He said, I want it finished by the end of the year. We had it finished on December 5th.
We are, we have one more minute. Celeste, please mention where listeners can find on your site how to check their sources.
If they go to our awakenedhearts.com website, right in the menu bar going down, there is a button that says Checking Sources. And through there, they can link to other articles that we've written about it. But in there, it will give you explicit detail on how to check God for his ID.
Thank you. and thank you so much. This has been a joy to have you, have the three of us together like this today. Thank you so much for sharing what you have learned, what you have experienced with everyone. I love you.
We love you so much, and we thank you for being you.
Thank you. And now on behalf of Matthew and me, love and peace to everyone. Goodbye.